Our next speaker is Neshan Tarayil, did I pronounce it? From Clemson University. Oh, here is another one.
Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you, Andrea and Fernando, for organizing this and inviting me. And I'm not with Distilla, as Gustav just mentioned. So I'm Neshan Tarayil in our collaborative group. Vidya is the one who does all the soil work, and I'm more of a plant ecophysiologist and chemist, and here I'm stretching my expertise, and let's see how well I do. Okay, and so this is the general outline. So I'll go into the plants first, and to introduce the complexities in plants, essentially because in most cases, it is the plant products that forms the precursor of soil organic matter. And then we'll revisit the soil organic matter formation along a plant microbe mineral continuum. And then I will highlight a series of studies where we used biomarker approaches to delineate the impact of plant chemistry on the content and composition of soil organic matter. So now coming to the plant, so whenever we are talking about plant biomarkers in a soil concept, in most cases we are talking about plant structural matrix. That is essentially the cell wall. So let's see what the, who the players are. So essentially that is the plant matrix. So here we have cellulose, hemicellulose, and lignin, which are bundled up to form these microfibrils, which are then rearranged to form the macrofibrils, which gives the rigidity and the resilience to the cell walls. And of which the cellulose is the most abundant one, followed by the hemicellulose and lignin. And we have a series of glycoproteins and tannins that are sprinkled in this matrix. And from a decomposition perspective, compounds like cellulose, hemicellulose, and glycoproteins can be easily degraded by the microbes, so we tend to call them labile substrates, whereas substrates such as lignins, tannins, or cuticular matrices offer more resistance to microbial degradation, and so we tend to call them recalcitrant, relatively recalcitrant. So now we know, who the players are, and now I'm going to look at a couple of instances how this could enhance the complexity to the plant matrix. So here, for example, in lignin, so the complexity could arise because of the changes in quantity and composition. So if we think about lignin, it is a heteropolymer formed from phenolic compounds, and it is formed through radical coupling reaction, which results in the formation of what we call a supramolecular self-assembled chaos. And essentially, then the recalcitrance of this could be because there are multiple bonds, or it could be because it offers hydrophobicity, which prevents the swelling of the matrix and enzymes being adhered onto the matrix. And complexity could also be resulting from the localization. For example, if you think about the localization here, think about our reinforced concrete. In a reinforced concrete, we have a concrete and then we have steel rods. And it is the integration of the concrete with the steel rods which essentially provides that rigidity to that matrix. And the one way to increase that integration is to have more deformation on the steel rods, which increases the integration, which provides better stability. Likewise, if you think about the plant matrix, yes, we have cellulose, yes, we have hemicellulose, lignins, but essentially they are not existing as discrete entities, but they are linked together. So they are linked together by ester linkages, or they are linked together by hydroxycinnamates, esters, or diesters. So essentially it is the integration of that matrix which essentially provides that rigidity or the resilience to that matrix. So now since we have seen, I have convinced you with my terminology that labile and recalcitrance, even though we go back and forth about the suitability of the terminology nowadays. So now what I'm going to do is walk you through the solid organic matter formation concept. Essentially, we are revisiting this concept, it's more of a synthesized from, different publications from different groups. So, yes, we have fast-decaying substrates that produced by the plant, slow-decaying substrates, and essentially, it influences the soil heterotrophic community. For example, if you have more labile substrate, it tends to be in exceptions are there, but essentially, it tends to be bacterial-dominated communities. Slow-decaying substrate facilitate fungal-dominated communities, and then it influences the decomposition product. So, for example, if a bacterial-dominated community acting on fast-decaying products result mostly in microbial-derived decomposition products, whereas fungal-dominated acting on slow-decaying or plant litter, it tends to retain the plant identity to a greater extent, so we have plant-derived products, and which in turn affects the soil organic matter stabilization. For example, microbial-derived are better mineral-associated, whereas plant-derived are usually associated with aggregate soil fractions. So essentially, these are the biotic components in operation, but we know that these are the biotic component in operation, which influences the decomposition and soil organic matter formation and stabilization. But we know that then there are broader factors that influence the decomposition. For example, climate is there, which directly influences decomposition. And also climate indirectly affects decomposition through their influence on biotic factors. And then there are the diaphic factors that directly influence the soil organic matter stabilization. So the question is there a way to delineate the effect of the biotic factors from those that of the broader influence like climate and diaphic factors? And we could do this if we have a study system where contrasting biotic components, that is the labile-derived and recalcitrant-derived, coexist within a same similar climate and edaphic factors. So this is where I introduce invasive plant species. So essentially in invaded ecosystems, what happens is that we have an invasive plant species encroaching into native ecosystems, and invasive plant species produce very contrasting litter chemistry compared to the natives, and they tend to coexist within a similar edaphic and climatic condition. For example, here is one of our sites where we have invasive species encroaching into a native ecosystems occurring under similar climatic and similar edaphic conditions. And so this is the study species I'm going to talk about. So it is Polygonum cespedatum, Japanese knotweed. And so this is with this Sheila, in case if you want to see her, that's her. So this is a Japanese knotweed producing very recalcitrant litter. And it is encroaching into old fields, which produces relatively labile litter. And then it has a very distinct invasion margin. The distinct but progressing invasion margin. And if you stand over here and if you look inside this way, this is what we see. So essentially, knotweed produce very dense mono, it is a single stand of knotweed, a very, very pure monocultural stand. So now I'm going to introduce two study systems. In one, it is Polygonum cespedatum dominated, or it is what we call a knotweed site, and the other one is kudzu dominated, that is what we call a kudzu site. In knotweed site, the invasive species is Japanese knotweed. It produces lignin-rich, relatively recalcitrant litter, whereas in kudzu site, kudzu being a legume, produces a relatively labile litter. And the sites were chosen where Japanese knotweed was invading relatively labile native ecosystems. So knotweed was encroaching into old fields, which produces relatively labile litter. Whereas in the case of kudzu, the sites were chosen where kudzu was invading into more recalcitrant native litter. So essentially like Pinus stand. So over here, we have a recalcitrant invader invading into native ecosystems that were accustomed to labile litter input. And over here, we have a labile invader invading into ecosystems that are accustomed to recalcitrant litter input to bring about that contrast in chemistry. So this is a regional study, 24 sites across eight states. And we collect the soil from multiple cores, both inside and outside within a same site in a very systematic manner, bring it to the lab, and we do a sequential extraction to get at the biomarkers. And I'm not going to go in detail about the biomarker, but that is essentially what we do. So we would have a water extract, we would have a solvent extract, we'll do a mild base hydrolysis to get at the ester fraction, strong base hydrolysis to get at the ether fraction, and then we'll have copper oxide oxidation or thiolysis going for lignin. And so then the outputs of all these extracts are screened through various instrumentation. So we use FTIR, NMR, GCMS, or ultra-high resolution accurate mass spectrometers. So obviously I'm not going to go in detail on any of the instrumentation, so I'm directly going to the results here. So our first objective is to understand, like to look at what essentially is in the plant before we start looking at what is in the soil. So what I'm going to focus in the first part of my talk is solely on Japanese knotweed. Remember, these are the recalcitrant, the plant that produces recalcitrant litter invading into labile ecosystems. So this is what is present in the knotweed litter. So the content of different classes of phenolic compounds, and within the phenolic there are subclasses like monophenols, flavonoids, and tannins. Monophenols about 1% of the mass, flavonoids about 4% of the mass, tannins about a little bit over 10% of the mass, and lignins also contribute to another 10%. So in total, around 25% of the knotweed Sanus litter is composed of these phenolic compounds. Okay, so that is in the plant mass. So now let's move on to see what is in the soil, especially in the extractable fraction of this soil, which is shown by this slide. So this is the microbial and plant compounds in knotweed invaded, which is black bars, and adjacent non-invaded, which is gray bars, across four sites. So in these analyses, our site is our random factor. So essentially what we see, what I show over here is multiple cores within a site and then site as our replicate. So what we see over here is the fungal biomarker is about three times higher in the invaded soil. Muriatic acid, which is the bacterial biomarker, is about 50% lower in the invaded soil. And the flavonoids is about 10% higher in the invaded soil. And now if we look at overall, the monophenolics is the biggest one. It is almost 10 times as higher as of the other biomarkers. And also in the invaded soil, it is about twice as high than in the non-invaded soil. So yes, the monophenolics is one of the most abundant class in these invaded soil across the site. So now what we are going to do is take that monophenolics, look at the individual composition. What makes these monophenolics? Which is presented in this slide. So this is the biplot of carbon normalized monophenolics, that is the vectors in the invaded, which is the filled symbols, and non-invaded, which is the open symbols across these four sites, two sites in Massachusetts, one site in New York, one site in North Carolina. So the pattern is very, very obvious. That is, in the invaded, non-invaded soils, the chemistry is different. Obviously, they are of different plant species. And what we can see is that because of invasion, it is a newer monophenolic chemistry in the invaded soil across the sites. Not only that, it tend to converge. So the invaded soil across the site has similar composition of the monophenolics than the adjacent soil within each site. So we saw in the previous slide, the monophenolics was the most abundant one. In this slide, what we are seeing is that not only they are abundant across the sites, but the chemistry is the same across the site. So the next question what we are interested in answering is, how much does this monophenolic chemistry that we see in the soil relate back to what was produced by the plant? So which is this slide over here. So this is the proportion of monophenolics and flavonoids in knotweed litter and in the soil invaded by knotweed across the four sites. So it is a proportion of monophenolics to flavonoids. So the monophenolics in the litter, it is the maroon, which is, flavonoids in the litter is the maroon, around 80%. But in the soil, it is only 5%, which means that the plant identity is not directly translating to soil identity, but rather the plant products are being degraded either biotically or abiotically, and that is what creates that the phenolic identity of the soil. So what I have been talking about is knotweed site and extractable biomarkers. And so you have to think about it, because extractable percentage of the carbon, yes, even though all through those methods, only 15% is present in the soil. 15% is extractable. So we want to look at the bulk soil carbon. So this is the bulk soil carbon, a similar graph. So essentially over here, the invaded is the filled symbols and the non-invaded is the open symbols. And what we see is a very similar trend with what we have seen before. That is, the invaded, non-invaded is all over the place. And because of invasion, they tend to converge to the newer states with a new chemistry. So now we move on to look at, so essentially what we are doing is, okay, so we had a 60-centimeter soil. Now we are trying to look at splitting it into different depths. And here we are looking at different depths like 0 to 5, 5 to 10, 10 to 15, invaded, which is the fill symbols, and the non-invaded, which is the open symbols. So this is from the knotweed site. So essentially what we see is that the invaded top soil is more abundant in plant biomarkers such as cutin, long chain fatty acids, and also it is abundant in sterols and phenols, whereas the soils at 10 to 15 centimeter is more abundant in seborrein, which makes sense because it is a root biomarker, and again, coming from the plant roots. So now I'm going to move on from the knotweed site to the kudzu site. And so this is the first time I'm introducing the kudzu in this mix. And so essentially we are going to look at the same information over here in the kudzu site. And one thing I want to talk about kudzu is that, yes, in kudzu, the invader is producing labile litter and it is encroaching into a native ecosystem which is accustomed to a recalcitrant litter. But the kudzu soil is also receiving the same amount of pine litter because the kudzu is understory whereas the pine is growing above it. So what we see is here is that is a 0 to 5 of pine litter is abundant in cutin, which is the above ground plant biomarker, and 5 to 10 is abundant in ergosterol, phenolics, and long chain fatty acids, microbial and plant biomarker. And one interesting point is that essentially, even though the invaded soil is receiving the same amount or similar amount of pine litter, essentially it is devoid of most of the plant biomarkers and it is more abundant in short-chain fatty acids. So the non-invaded pine soils were abundant in plant and fungal biomarkers, while the kudzu invaded soil is abundant in mostly bacterial or microbial biomarkers. So now we are looking at the knotweed site, the total carbon, and the two key biomarkers. So the total carbon is more abundant in invaded soil, 0 to 5 centimeter, and the magnitude tend to decrease as we go down. And essentially, it is the significant or the higher magnitude effect is at 0 to 5 centimeter. Whereas if you look at the kudzu, the opposite is the case where, again, invaded site is black, but the magnitude is kind of retained across the soil depth. And one reason for this is because the knotweed recalcitrant litter during decomposition it is producing less leachates, whereas kudzu, more labile litter, during the decomposition it is producing more leachable material which can percolate down and actually probably could influence the soil carbon at a lower depth as well. Now, we saw what is in the plan, what is in the extractable fraction of the soil, what is in the bulk fraction of the soil, what we also saw what is in across the soil depths. Now what we are going to look at is what is actually present in different size fractions of the soil. So mineral soil, mineral part, so the mineral macro aggregates and micro aggregates. So over here, so this is the alkyl carbon, long chain fatty acids, plant biomarker, putin plant biomarker, phytosterol. So essentially what we see is that most of the plant biomarkers are abundant in the micro and macro aggregates and not in the cell clay fraction, which makes sense because remember, as we went through this concept, we were talking about plant biomarkers being accumulating in the aggregate fraction and not in the cell clay fraction. So this makes sense. And so now we are going to the same information on the kudzu side. Remember, in kudzu, kudzu is invading into an recalcitrant pine forest. And if we look at the kudzu side, we see a different pattern. So here again, silk clay, macro and micro, micro and macro aggregate. Blue is the pine and the maroon is the kudzu. So if we just look at just the blue bars, we see that it is kind of essentially the same across the size fractions. So putin, suberin, long chain fatty acid, and phytosterols, which means that irrespective, the plant biomarkers are accumulating even in the silk clay fraction in this particular site. And another point to note is that essentially because of kudzu invasion, the amount of biomarker is decreasing only in the micro and macro aggregates, but not in the silk clay fraction. That's true for putin, true for suberin, true for long chain fatty acid, but not true for phytosterol. And phytosterol, it actually decreases in the silk clay fraction as well. So to summarize, the plant invasion resulted in convergence of carbon chemistry, and this carbon chemistry convergence occurred both in the extractable and the bulk fraction. And the recalcitrant input generally had a higher soil carbon content, and part of it is due to the particulate organic matter. And the labile input resulted in a lower accumulation of plant biomarkers, and there was more biomarkers lost from the aggregate fraction than from the mineral fraction. And labile inputs generally had a greater influence of carbon at the lower depths. I would like to acknowledge our collaborators. Peter Alford works on invasion. Cindy Nakajo is our microbial person. Caroline Preston and Myrna Simpson is our NMR guys. Bojan Singh is our soil chemistry person, graduate students, especially Miyako Tamura, who did all the work that I presented here pretty much. USDA NIFA funding source and NSF. And one other thing before I would like to take the questions. And before that, I video did mention me to post these two. So if you are interested, we have two postdocs happening. Email her or send it to me. With that, I would like to take any questions. And thank you all for your attention. So essentially what we presented, so the amino sugars, I think that was from the knotweed invaded side, and essentially it decreased inside the knotweed stand, I think, if I remember it correctly. And so most of these invaded sites are essentially at least 15 years old. Our Yama site is 15 years old site. So since we are talking about the soil carbon, we kind of track the sites which has been invaded for at least 15 years or more. And
So the question was, the amino sugars are not stable and still it changed. Amino sugars are very stable and still it changed. And probably, and again, so what we are looking at right there is the biomarker approach, and what we are reporting back is the biomarker what we observe. So we have the microbial study where we actually looked at the community composition as well. And what we saw in the community composition is that inside the knotweed site, essentially it is pretty much fungi dominated, and we are assuming that the bacterial community is lower in these sites, which probably might have driven that observation. Yes. Sure. So yes, that is one. That is very evident from our analysis. So for example, our strongest impact or the retention of the identity of the invasive species occur in sites which has a higher clay content. So if it is on a sandy site, the distinction is kind of not that much, irrespective of how long the species has been there. And also, it is more evident in northern sites than in southern sites, because probably there are confounding reasons for that, because at least the knotweed was introduced in Massachusetts, and from there it is moving down until South Carolina now. So it could be because of the age, but also it could be because of the climate, where it is more humid climate or more higher temperature in south, faster decomposition, and the biomarkers are being lost, whereas in the north, cooler climates, the biomarkers are more retained in those soils. So yes, there is an effect of that, and so it is from an invasion context, the invasion ecology, the kind of thing if you are just going for a one site or two sites, so that's why usually we take the site as random factor, but yes, the influence of climate and the soil characteristic is very evident.
Thank you.